Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed. How do structured and unstructured learning environments affect canine behavior? That's the question that got stuck in my mind as I thought about Elvis. Not Elvis, the dead rock star. Elvis, the dog whose innate understanding of calculus was a subject of last month's podcast. Nobody trained Elvis to use calculus to retrieve his ball from the water as fast as he could. His desire to play and his owner's willingness to toss the ball again to continue the game were all it took. In that hypertexty way my mind works, Elvis's knowledge of applied higher mathematics, at least as it related to his ball bobbing in Lake Michigan, and its link to play reminded me of a favorite study of play in children. Two groups of young children were each given an identical toy to play with for a specific period of time. The researchers showed the children in one group what the toy could do. They left the toy with the children in the second group to figure it out for themselves. When the researchers returned, they asked the children in each group to show them what the toy could do. The kids in the first group showed the researchers the same function that the researchers had shown them. However, those in the second group demonstrated those functions plus a lot more. Some of these never occurred to the researchers. It's possible that some of them never occurred to the toy's creators either. This got me thinking about the push in some quarters to begin formal training in puppies as young as possible. This may be especially true for animals destined to some higher calling, where the animal may be exposed to challenging physical and mental conditions. These include search and rescue, law enforcement, service or support work, as well as competitive sports, among others. Then there are all those animals who receive little or no formal training. How do these different approaches affect the animal's behavior and the human-animal bond? To help determine this, let's consider an example of each of these approaches, beginning with a structured learning environment. DJ wants her puppy, Zeus, to be an obedience and agility champion. As soon as she gets the 8-week-old pup, she starts training him. She uses treats to lure him into sit, down, or stay positions. When he obeys, she gives him a treat and praises him enthusiastically. Once he masters her list of basic behaviors, she moves on to more complex behaviors using the same approach. Ask DJ how Zeus plays, and she'll give you a list of games she's teaching her puppy to play. Almost all of them involve DJ's direct participation. Zeus responds more like the preschoolers who told the researchers the toy could do what the researchers said it could do. No more nor less. In this example, DJ even defines what comprises play for her dog. If he does more than she taught him, it bothers her as much as it does if he does less. In our unstructured teaching environment example, we meet Lexi and her puppy Tulip. What little early training Lexi does with her puppy consists of attaching an appropriate word and low-keyed praise to any desirable behavior he volunteers during their explorations on and off Lexi's property. When the puppy automatically follows her, Lexi says, "Good come, Tulip. and massages his ears. When he lies down beside her for a nap, when Lexi is working at her desk or on the couch watching a movie, she praises him with a good down tulip. Ask Lexi how Tulip plays, and she'll tell you that everything's a potential toy or game to him. Although he enjoys playing with her and others, he also enjoys making up games and playing by himself. In this scenario, Tulip is more like the preschoolers in the experiment who discovered all kinds of things the toy could do that the researchers hadn't mentioned. This raises the question, which kind of learning environment is better? The answer to that is a definite, it depends. It depends on what we want our dogs to do most of the time. That most of the time is the tricky part. Even though some sources claim that dogs always live in the moment, it turns out that sometimes we humans do too. Our definitions of what we want our puppies and dogs to do when we get them may succumb to living in the momentism. And when this happens, it may lead us to take approaches that create problems for us later. For example, the result of Zeus's highly structured learning environment was a dog who excelled in competitive sports. This brought great joy to them both when DJ's lifestyle included lots of time to spend with her dog. But that same time-intensive approach became maladaptive when lifestyle changes placed other demands on her that limited her time with her dog. And the changes that placed different demands on her resulted in her making different demands on her dog, too. Human lifestyle changes are so common that many of us think of them as a normal part of life. These include things like accepting more demanding but rewarding new jobs, the addition of roommates, partners, spouses, or kids to the household, moving to a more complex environment, all normal life events that may reveal flaws in the structured animal learning environment approach. One of the most common problems I've encountered in these dogs is learned laziness, which often makes its appearance when dogs feel vulnerable for some reason. When Zeus was learning and refining his obedience and agility skills, DJ gave thanks for how food-motivated he was. Using treats, she trained him to perform complex behaviors that made the two of them the envy of her friends and the bane of her competitors. Consequently, when DJ and Zeus moved to a new home and Zeus started ignoring her commands, she couldn't understand what had happened. When he growled and snapped at her when she kept him from going after the letter carrier, she felt he must surely have a brain tumor. But he didn't. During his training, Zeus had learned to obey for food. That worked fine when he was in his physical and mental prime in familiar environments. But when DJ and her then 8-year-old dog moved from their cabin abutting acres of conservation land to a home with a small yard in the suburbs, he fell apart. He became destructive when left alone when his owner worked long hours and aggressive towards certain people and dogs. Establishing and protecting his territory became his number one priority. It replaced food as his motivator. And because he felt so insecure in his new position, his attempts to fulfill this priority took its toll on his behavior, as well as his health and relationship with DJ. How do the results of Tulip's unstructured learning environment hold up? Because Tulip's early learning experiences primed him to be self-reinforcing, Lexi describes him as a go-with-the-flow kind of dog. She liked that because she knew his behavior was reliable. She could trust him in all kinds of different environments and situations. However, sometimes she wished he'd obey commands more quickly, like those trained dogs whose instant responses she admired. On the upside, though, she did admit that when push came to shove and she needed Tulip to obey right away, he knew this by the unusually firm tone of her voice and did what she wanted. Still, she added, sometimes he can be such a goofball. So there's the trade-off. Like so much when we interact with animals capable of cognition and sequential thinking, the key is balance and perspective. There's nothing wrong with providing our dogs with all structured or unstructured learning opportunities. It's just that learning to adapt to changes in our and their lives is yet another one of those life skills where the best teaching strategy probably isn't one or the other. It's using them both.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.